Hello, this is Chris English welcoming you to another edition of At Home This Morning, our programme of interviews about matters of interest and importance for both our older listeners and those not so old, in and around the city of Brighton and Hove. In the next hour, we'll be hearing from Brighton and Hove Buses Commercial Director Nick Hill, yacht broker and Brighton Royal National Lifeboat Institution crew member Tim Kingston, local musical theatre composer and star Alex Ellison, scientist Catherine Templar-Lewis, and Alan Spence from Network Rail, and Jake Mills, the founder and CEO of Chasing Stigma. Well, to start, we're joined by Nick Hill, the commercial director of Brighton and Hove Buses, who've got two reasons to celebrate. The first are some new air filters that are fitted to the buses, and the second is about above and beyond. More of that in a moment. But, Nick, welcome to At Home This Morning. And what's this about air filters?
Yeah, good morning, Chris. Thanks for inviting me on. Air filters. So all our buses have air filters as standard. But during the pandemic, we've been working with suppliers on the possibility of them preventing harmful viruses and bacteria from being able to get through. So they've actually come up with a multi-layered foam, which they've then laminated, and that stops the virus and bacteria getting through. So it effectively captures the carrier of the virus, whether that's water, dust or aerosol, and then it kills them. And as soon as they're made available, our engineers were straight on the case, and within a few weeks they managed to put them on all of our 400 odd buses, and they're all live and across our fleet already.
And these are filters for the air circulating in the buses, not just the filters for the engines.
Yeah, so it's coming through. It's also affecting the air coming through from outside, and that's already been the filters already stopping pollution from coming through from outside as well. But they're just one of a number of things we've been doing throughout the pandemic to try and make buses as safe as possible for people who have been needing to continue to use them. So we've been reducing the capacity on vehicles to enable social distancing, hand sanitizer dispensers on buses, and we've been using special hospital grade Gardasides and doing extra cleaning as well to keep the buses really safe. And there's been studies from around the UK and around the world that have shown this has been really successful. There's actually a scientist who recently said that they thought the safest place that you could be is actually on public transport at the moment.
Wow. That's interesting to know. And do these filters also cut down harmful pollution from other vehicles, not the buses themselves?
Yeah, so they're generally about reducing pollution anyway. So reducing pollution coming in from outside. Of course, we've been doing lots of work in terms of our own vehicles. So certainly, our latest buses we've been investing in recent years had ultra low emissions, and the most recent ones have zero emissions running in the city centre on the electric drivetrains that they use. So all these kinds of things collectively have made a huge, huge benefit to people using buses.
Well, moving on to the second point, above and beyond sounds amazing. What's it all about?
Well, it's about using the 24 of our most recent, newest buses. I think they're green. Everyone else sees them as being blue buses running around the city. On Route 1, and it's using those kind of almost as a billboard to kind of celebrate some community champions. There's been many, many, many people nominated both in as individuals and as groups, and really kind of celebrating fantastic work that they've been doing in the community.
So how will they be celebrated? Will their pictures appear on the buses?
Yes, absolutely. So kind of giant life-size images inside an ampersand on each side of the bus. There's also information about them inside the bus, telling people travelling on the bus and about the work they're doing in the community, which hopefully will act as a kind of really good inspiration and something that's kind of really positive to celebrate at the moment, because we all need something to smile about in these difficult times. And there's special information on our website too. But these aren't people who have nominated themselves. They've been nominated by other people. The people who have had a real positive impact on other people's lives through great charity work, great community work, whether they're running, running a local charity, whether running a local shop even, or a local restaurant where people are kind of, the owners are going the extra mile to look after everyone in the community in this difficult time.
Will there be more?
So far, there have been 5 introduced on the sides of the buses, and more will be added in the coming weeks and months. Of course, we've got a long-standing tradition at Brighton & Hove of naming all of our buses after historical figures in the community. But this time we were kind of thinking, there's so much great work going on now, we really need to do something to kind of thank and recognise the work that's going on now, as well as the kind of historical figures from the past.
So will there be another session of nominations?
So we've been through the current round for this current batch of vehicles. And of course, you know, we'll take on feedback and think about what we do with the next buses. We like to kind of do things differently. And yeah, certainly if it's successful, we'll consider it again for the future.
Well, finally, as we're beginning to come out of lockdown, will services start to get back to normal?
So since schools recently returned back, we've got services back over 90% of pre-COVID levels. So there's lots of capacity. There's, you know, comprehensive service running across the city, you know, still running 24 hours a day. We're running extra school buses as well to help provide extra capacity if children get to and from school. And actually on Route 1, we're actually running more buses than ever. We've actually got higher than pre-COVID frequencies to provide lots of space for that particularly busy route. But, you know, you can go on our website and see, you can click on a bus and see how busy the bus is coming down the road. We can go on a map and see how busy a future journey is likely to be, if you want to see how busy or quiet a particular journey is likely to be. But, you know, the main thing is we're here and ready for people to travel again safely. And we want to do our bit to help rebuild the city from the difficult times we've all been going through.
If you'd like to find out more about those community champions that Nick Hill was talking about, simply enter Brighton & Hove Buses into your web browser and click on the Above and Beyond image. Now, last time we were hearing from a gentleman called Tim Kingston, he was talking about the selling and buying of boats. Well, he's also got involved in a new project called Boat Care Sussex. And to find out what that's all about, Tim's joining us now via Zoom. Good morning, Tim.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Very well. Just that, what is Boat Care Sussex all about?
It's a new entity and born through my Boatshed Brighton Yacht Brokerage's experience of seeing value wiped from people's expensive assets, i.e. their boats. As a broker, I constantly see boats and their values decimated for no good reason at all, purely because people don't know what they need to do, or they simply bury their heads in the sand and hope for the best. And these poor people, I've come to realise, need a bit of guidance and a friendly helping hand. So if you imagine a typical boat owner, they're not all like this, but there are quite a lot. Think of Mr. visits his boat once a year, boat owner, and there's a lot of them. When he visits his boat and arrives with his partner and his kids for a weekend of fun, he tends to find the batteries flat, the engines won't start, the cushions are mouldy, interior smells damp, and the fridge is full of gone-off food. That's usually margarine for some reason. And that means that the family usually instantly falls out of love with their beautiful boat and wants to go home. And this can often mean the end of boat ownership for the owner and a bit of a shock when it comes to assessing her value. And actual sales figures that where we've assessed boats have encountered problems like I've just described.
So what are you offering with your service?
Well, I've got, I benefit from over 30 years worth of marine engineering experience. I spent 25 years in the Royal Navy as a marine engineer. And so I got to know all about boats or ships, how they're put together, how everything works. And that translates into a lot of marine engineering knowledge and how to look after boats, which benefits me as a broker. But as I mentioned, I started to see boats needlessly having their values decimated and not being able to be used when they want to. And I thought, actually, I'm not using my marine engineering knowledge here. So I can put that to good use just by letting people know what they need to do to their boats, and we can undertake some basic jobs. We can move boats about, we can start engines up, we can warm them through, etc. But other ways we can help is by managing maintenance or managing projects if a boat's having a big job done, and generally looking after a boat on the owner's behalf. And if you take the cost of that, and that is a case by case cost, weigh that up against the the value of a boat that's been lost through not doing this basic stuff, it's actually peanuts, and it needn't impinge on the time you can use your boat. You know, it can be very discreet in the background. We'll let you know what he's doing. We'll advise you, and hopefully you follow our advice. And as I said, for very little money, a little bit of work, a little bit of management, we can really help to retain your boat's value and her use when you need her.
And those of us that are in the fortunate, I was nearly said unfortunate position of owning a boat, it's not a cheap operation, is it? So to keep a boat by the time you've paid insurance, mooring fees, running costs, that sort of thing. So how much would your service...
Well, as I said, it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, we recommend quite a few small jobs that need to be done regularly. So these are all really small jobs that owners can do. But if owners aren't with their boats, they can't do. So we're looking at checking bilge levels, so water in the bottom of the boat that can rise, damage equipment and cause a damp atmosphere, general dampness, general security, making sure lockers and hatches are closed, watertight, etc., covers on the upper deck and spray hoods, that kind of thing, canvas all in place and tied down so they don't flog themselves to death. Running engines regularly and crucially, not just running them, starting them and leaving them running for a few minutes, but putting some load on them, getting them warm, which has massive beneficial effects on engines. Other things like making sure batteries are on charge, so the batteries are in place, we've got some credit on the electric meter, so the batteries won't go flat over time. And other basic things like just making sure fenders are in place, in the right place, inflated, and mooring ropes are correctly tied up, etc., etc., to make sure your boat's secure and going to stay in place. And, you know, we would just charge a very low hourly rate for that, and for anything that we need to buy, we'd make sure that the owner was happy to buy it in the first place. And we'd just add a 10% management fee on top of that just for our time going to buy it and putting it on the boat and make sure it's fine in place.
Okay. And how do people find out more and get in touch with you?
I'm reachable at boatcaresussex@gmail.com. And I'm at the moment using the same number as I use for Boatshed Brighton Yacht Brokers, which is 079-200-22540. And our website, boatcaresussex.co.uk, is in the process of being constructed. So we're just working our way around that one at the moment whilst trying to sell boats and whilst trying to keep boats going for their owners and making sure they make the best of them.
You're talking there about Boatshed. What is the boat market like these days?
From my point of view, and born from local experience in the Sussex area, boat sales have been phenomenal all throughout the COVID crisis and both lockdowns. I think, you know, we hear reports people want their own back garden. People want to be able to get away where they haven't got open space. People want the staycations, and people are just looking for other things to do. And so boats have been selling very, very fast, and the owners are in a very, very good position because they know their boats will be sought after generally if they look after them. That's another clue to boat care.
And finally, you're a member of Brighton Lifeboat Crew, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. So how are things with the boat in Brighton?
Well, it's very exciting at the moment, Chris. We've received our boat Random Harvest back after a refit. So she went away to pool for a couple of months and was replaced by a temporary boat. And now she's returned and she's extra orange. And she has lots of updated and nicely maintained and fitted equipment. So we're finding that the throttle is very responsive. She has new engines, which are really lovely and smooth and powerful. But in general, she just feels like a new boat. So it means that we're able to respond as best we can.
And I'm sure everybody will be ready to leap into action. Hopefully not in the real foul weather, but when the sun comes out, catching kids on lilos and that sort of thing. So more power to your elbow. And how is the situation with the crew? Are there need for new volunteers?
Well, we're fairly low at the moment, but we're able to keep the boat on service almost all the time. We do have the little blip here and there, but we all team together. So if somebody becomes unavailable, then we all sort of talk and find somebody else who can step in. We've got some trainees who are very close to finishing their at their training, which can take quite a while. So they'll become fully fledged crew members, which will help. Although COVID is playing a part in slowing it down, soon we will have a new small intake, brand new trainees who are just going through the selection process at the moment. So exciting times. There's always lots going on, always lots of people coming and going, but the general idea is to keep that boat ready and available with crew and equipment for whenever she's needed.
And a message with the spring and summer coming up to people that go down to the water, whether it's in it or on it, what's the message from the RLI?
Well, from the top of my head, I would say make sure you're doing whatever you're doing in the water somewhere where there's a lifeguard. Brighton Council provides very good lifeguards, and just don't take any risk. The sea is far stronger than you think. I think particularly with Brighton Beach, where it shelves very steeply or slopes down very steeply at certain points down the beach, and very often people are caught unaware by that. They think that the gently sloping part of the beach carries on and then it suddenly drops. So if you can't see that drop and take a foot forward, you could very well find yourself in the water and being dragged out by the waves and the tide. So just make sure you're somewhere where you're being watched, preferably by a lifeguard, and try not to take any risks.
We were joined by Tim Kingston from Boatshed Brighton and the marina-based RLI Lifeboat. And for more information, you can go to Brighton Lifeboat on Facebook. We're hearing from Brighton Theatre Group chairman Keith Shepherd in the last programme, but we're still on the musical themes, because a member of Brighton Theatre Group from many years ago, a young man called Alex Evans, who has now got the stage name of Alex James Ellison, is joining us now because he co-wrote and produced the musical Fiver. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Tell us all about Fiver.
So Fiver started, I think, 3 years ago now, with an idea of writing a musical of following a £5 note around. So you kind of meet all the people who have a £5 note. You see their circumstances. You see how they're connected to the world and how what their relationship with money is, whether they value a £5 note or whether it's just change for them. Yeah, throughout the show, you get to meet, I think, 30 or 40 characters, and it's with a small cast of five people, and we all multi-role and tell the story. And so it's really a show about human interaction and connections. And we like to think that if you come and watch it, there's some characters in there that everyone will relate to, because there's such a wide variety of people in it.
And it's a wide genre, isn't it? It's not in a particular slot.
Yeah. So I guess the music is mostly contemporary pop musical theatre. But there's some bluesy songs, there's some folky songs, there's some patter songs. And I think it's such a diverse style. And that is another reason why people, if you watched it, you might like that song, because that's kind of what you like. And then other songs you might not be as fond as, but there's something for everyone.
But you did a live stream from a theatre. Did that work well?
Yeah, it was. So we did it last November in the lockdown. So it was when we had a month of not being able to leave the house. We could either pre-record the show and stream it a few times so that people can just tune and watch it, or we could do it live three times. So we decided that our show is all about live. It's all about being in the moment and experiencing it. I play a busker in the show, and I used to busk in Brighton. So it's that kind of idea that anything can happen when you're on the street. Someone could walk past, someone could give you a fiver, someone, you don't know what's going to happen. It's all interacting and earning your wage. So we thought the best way to do it was to do a live stream of it. And at the time, people hadn't really been doing that as much, because I guess it's more viable to do it when, if you pre-record it, you can make more money as well, because you can just do it once and then sell the tickets three times. We felt it was important for our show to do it live each time. So it did work. It worked surprisingly well. We had an interactive interval where I would kind of stay on the stage as the narrator character and look through the tweets that I've been getting in and do some shout outs and some birthdays and stuff. And it just kind of made it a bit more, everyone felt more connected to it, because they were like, this is happening right now. It might be up in London and I might be in America, or I might be in Poland, or wherever I am in the world, it is happening right now. So that kind of captivated our audience.
Fiver is an English £5 note, but could it be an American dollar or any currency?
Yeah, I guess we've spoken about it a little bit. Yeah, it could be a dollar. I mean, the actual value of a dollar is a lot less than a fiver. So that's one thing to bear in mind. I actually think if we did it in America, we'd probably keep it as fiver, because I think Americans like the whole British idea of a five perm note, and like these two young guys from London have written a musical about a fiver. I think that'd be quite a, yeah, I mean, it could be anything.
The cast, I mean, there are literally five of you on stage, yeah, and not in costume. Is that a deliberate policy?
No. So in the original production, we had costumes to an extent. These are all normal everyday people, so it would really just be putting on a jacket to play a character and then putting on a hat for another character, or putting a jumper on, or just so we can differentiate between, because they're all multi-rolling. Obviously in the concert it was a lot more chilled and laid back. We all stayed on stage the whole time and we all watched each other's performances, so we just kind of went for a general wear a nice smart casual outfit that kind of sums up who you are and the characters you play.
We were talking about the album. It went to number one in the iTunes list. How amazing is that?
I know. We were so shocked. It's like the best it could have gone, really. We had lots of pre-orders. We have quite a strong fan base, which we built up from the show. And they're so active on social media. So it seems like, well, when I go on my phone sometimes, it seems like we've got thousands of fans. Really, it's the same 100 people kind of tweeting and chatting in and making videos and singing the songs and getting it, helping us to spread the word and get it out there. But it sometimes feels like hundreds, and it sometimes feels like thousands. So I think that helps with getting into the iTunes charts.
Going back to musical theatre, which is your true love, really. I mean, yeah, you like performing. What's coming up? Anything? Or is it with the theatre's been dark?
To be honest, at the moment, it's quiet. You get the occasional audition come through, we have to make a self-tape for. But even then, those are mostly commercials or like small TV parts. Musical theatre is what I want to be doing and performing in. And before lockdown, I'd spent the past, since I graduated, probably 7 years working in this industry, living up in London. And now it's all come to a standstill and I've moved back home to Brighton with my family. It's been a nice chance to kind of reconnect with my family, reconnect with real life a bit. I sometimes think that when you're living the life of a performer, you just live every day as it comes. You're just going from one audition to the next, going from one of your side jobs, and just trying to keep money coming in so you can afford to live up in London. So actually this has given me like a year where I can just breathe, refocus what I want to be working on. But there's nothing really set in stone of what's going to happen yet.
Going back to the days of Brighton Theatre Group, you were quite a star performer with that. Do you remember those days with affection, or were they a bit of a pain?
No, absolutely. It was like the best few years of my life. We're doing those shows and then going up to college and went to Brit School. And I think the friendships you make there, I mean, I'm still friends with most of my good friends who I met at BTG. The shows that we put on, they're just all such happy memories. And I think actually people who are doing it now are probably aren't aware of how much it would affect them and how much they'll benefit from having the opportunities when they're younger. Definitely don't take it for granted. Enjoy every moment you're there. Like sometimes I used to think rehearsals, like all I wanted to do was the show. And it'd be like, oh, we've got to do rehearsals but I just want to do the show. But now, like, rehearsals are part of it, and thinking back to it, all the fun we had in the rehearsals, and actually the show was only a week, but the rehearsals went on for months, and it was building those relationships and gaining the confidence. And I do think I owe a lot to Keith, and I owe a lot to everybody who was part of BTG and who kind of helped make me see that this was a viable option as a career.
Fiver, the album, where can people get hold of it?
So it's on iTunes, it's on Spotify, and it's on Amazon. It's basically on any streaming site. We're also doing CDs, like limited edition CDs. We've only got a few left now. But you can get those from the Fiverr Musical website, which is just fivermusical.co.uk. But yeah, you can listen anywhere, really. And the more streams you get, the more popular it can become. I've just started a TikTok, which I'm just learning about, because apparently TikTok's a good marketing tactic for getting people to hear the music. And really, I feel confident that we've created something which is really special. We've got an amazing cast. The band sound great. It's been all edited and mixed and really nicely. So it's not even like, oh, I just need to like get lucky so that someone hears it. It's literally, I want people to hear it, and then I have faith that they'll like some bits of it at least.
And what's your favorite number from Fiverr?
The opening number for me, as it's one of the songs that I played, but it's also the song where it sums up like the vibe of the show. It kind of sets off on a good foot. The whole cast get involved and they're all singing along, and it's like nice big harmonies, nice big like celebratory, and it also comes back as the end. Yeah, I think that's probably my favourite. There's a couple of songs, Whisper It To Me in the middle, which I think Heber sings lovely. But yeah, they all have a special place in my heart.
I was talking to Alex James Ellison. Also, I've known him for many years, Alex Evans from Brighton. And incidentally, that cast recording went straight to number one in the iTunes chart on its release earlier this month. It's safe to say that joyful moments have been hard to find over the past year, as a nation that has had to miss a whopping 737 million celebrations because of the pandemic, we're firmly looking to the future and a return to some sense of normality. And smiling is important, and it's difficult with a mask. Well, joining us, Catherine Templer-Lewis, how important is a smile?
Hello. A smile is incredibly important. I know we sort of, it sounds so simple, but I spend my life looking at brains and nothing lights up the brain like a smile. And that's my brain if I'm smiling, or your brain if I'm smiling at you. And the truth is that that happens even if you're wearing a mask, because our brains are brilliant at detecting smiles in people's voices and eyes. And it has this very powerful effect. It produces these chemicals that flood your system and they boost your mood and your immune system.
I was going to talk about the mask situation, because can you still tell if people are smiling?
You really can. And I think sort of we're in danger of forgetting that. And we must never forget smiles, because they are so important to connecting us with people. We're very, very social creatures. And we do need people and we do need smiles, especially at this time. You know, the research has shown that we've missed more than 737 million celebrations in the last year as a nation. That's birthdays, that's weddings, that's christenings. So now more than ever, we need those smiles. I mean, the good news is that we're going to turn that around, and Krispy Kreme are on a mission to create 70 million smiles in 2021 through a range of amazing initiatives and just encouraging people to smile more.
What are the top tips that people can adapt?
I think at the moment, we're still sort of moving out of this phase. So we can't sort of, you know, give all those loved ones a hug that we want to. But there are still things we can do. Connection, even just digital connection or calling somebody is still going to help sort of their well-being and lift their mood a bit. You know, socially distanced walk, coffee. It really gives us that sense of community and belonging that we really need. And kindness, you know, be generous, whether it's bringing a sweet treat to someone's doorstep, smiling at a stranger, or donate to a food bank. All these are going to bring a smile to yourself and the person that you're giving it to. And actually, nostalgia is a really interesting one, because just playing a song that reminds us of childhood or eating some comfort food, it lights up this amazing bit of the brain called the limbic system, and that makes you feel good as well. And nature. The brain is amazing. It loves nature. Go into nature, even for 5 minutes, and you see all these amazing brain waves being created. And the sun is coming out. The sun's right out now where I'm sitting. And so all these little things we can do until we're finally reunited.
Looking to the future, we hope we've got a summer to come. Is the sunshine, does that make us better?
It does indeed. Sunshine is brilliant for us. Not just the fact that it makes us create all these amazing vitamins, but it really does lift our mood. And so, you know, as spring comes, we will start to look forward to the future. And we are. The research shows that, you know, 53% of us, the first thing we want to do is just see family and friends in real life, as well as things like eating out at restaurants and travel and celebrations. It's all about the celebrations.
You mentioned a hug earlier. How important is the ability to hug each other?
It's really important, actually. When you hug someone, you produce some chemicals called oxytocin in the brain, and they make you feel that you belong. And we are missing that. Now, there's ways you can also produce these chemicals, and actually smiling is one of them, and reaching out and connecting. But it's the one thing that I can't wait to do. It's the first thing I'm going to do is find my mum and give her a hug.
It's something that we do unconsciously. And because of the advent of social media, or as I call it, unsocial media, we seem to be dominated by seeing things on our tiny screens in front of us. Is that good for us or bad for us?
It's a funny one, technology, because during this time, technology has both been our sort of worst enemy and best friend, because it's allowed us to connect. But I hope the silver lining of this pandemic has been this realization of how important real life interactions are, and all these amazing sort of initiatives that you can get stuck into. And, you know, just part of this campaign, we've got community heroes initiatives, community drops, all sorts of things. So I urge everybody, when we can, to get back out into real life and start connecting.
And some tips, are there some simple things that we can follow to make not only our own lives, but those of our friends and relations better.
I think it's really just about connection and remembering. How often do we think, oh, I must call that person, and then you don't. But actually that phone call has a huge impact on their well-being and your own as well. We always, it's like put your oxygen mask on first. We always forget, you know, and we talk about sort of, you know, giving people treats and kindness, but treat yourself and be kind to yourself. And this will pass, and we're going to get out there, and I'm going to hug everybody.
Catherine Templer-Lewis. Now, of course, safety and mental health is always vitally important to everybody, as the news over the past few days and weeks has shown. But even more important is the situation on our railways. And joining us now is Jake Mills from Stigma and Alan Spence, Head of Passenger and Public Safety of Network Rail. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
First of all, if I can start with Jake, mental health, it's been in sharp focus just recently. Is it something that we should all be aware of, and what can we do?
Yeah, absolutely, because quite frankly, it's something that we all have. Mental health doesn't have to mean mental illness. We've all got physical health and we've all got mental health. And like with our physical health, it can go up, it can go down. There's different reasons, things in our control, things out of our control. And it's exactly the same with our mental health. What we all need to be aware of is the things that are good for our mental health, the things that are not so good for our mental health. And if we're struggling, and if we're feeling like we can't cope, or we're feeling in crisis, we need to be reaching out for help and support. It's so important that we get this message out there to say, you don't have to just deal with it. There's help and support out there, so reach out for it.
How can people do that? Where can they get help? For example, family isn't willing or doesn't seem interested.
Well, that's one of the difficulties, really, is that the difference between our physical health and our mental health is, with our physical health, we tend to know what to do if we're feeling unwell. We tend to know where to turn. With our mental health, we don't necessarily know where to turn. And this is what our studies with Network Rail have shown, is that people aren't reaching out for help or support despite struggling. And so at Chasing the Stigma, we developed a database of mental health support services. It's got thousands of support services on there, whether that is NHS, whether that is private, whether that is voluntary or charity groups, to make it easier for people to see and understand and access that help and support, but importantly, doing it at an earlier stage than what they usually would.
And how can they find out about your work?
So you can go on hubofhope.co.uk, or you can download an app, which is free on the App Store. And that will be a directory that will give you access to information about thousands of support. And that's why we're teaming up with Network Rail for a television ad and getting the messages out there on radio and everything else. And things like you allowing us to come on here is really important to let people know they're not alone and there's help and support available.
And that's Hub of Hope. And just that in Google, that's all you need.
Yeah, you can do that, yeah.
Well, you mentioned Network Rail, and as I said, joining us is Alan Spence. Alan, Network Rail sometimes is the easy option for people that are wanting to not be here.
I think it perhaps makes it sound too simple to talk about an easy option, but certainly across the rail network, we see a significant number of people who come to the railway at a point of serious crisis in their lives, with mental health problems that have led them to a point. And so what we recognised was, while we can intervene with those people, and we have done so very successfully over the last year, around 1,500 occasions where we've managed to intervene with those people to catch them before they fall. But there's a far better way. There's a far better way than waiting for somebody to be in that point of extreme crisis. And that's to help people get help with their mental health earlier on, before they reach that point of serious crisis. And hence why we've partnered with Chasing the Stigma to try to signpost people to where they can get that support before they reach that point where they really don't know what else to do.
Unfortunately, unlike a physical broken arm or something like that, a broken mind isn't that visible, is it? So how can other people recognise somebody in distress?
A lot of things that we can do to recognise it in ourselves or in others. You know, if behaviours have changed, if people, and I know it's difficult now when we can't really see people, but if somebody feels a little more distant, if somebody feels a bit more isolated, I say if behaviours have changed. But the biggest thing I can say to anybody is if you notice something in somebody else, ask them, just have that conversation, actually ask them if they're okay. And make that a really simple and obvious thing to do in a really natural place. But ask somebody if you're worried about them.
Going back to Alan and the railways, is one of the problems the fact that many stations are unmanned these days?
So it's not always at stations that people find themselves at that point of crisis. It can be at any of the points along our railway. And while we've got a lot of systems to detect people who are in places they shouldn't be, that's, as I said earlier, the last line of defence. So it's not just a matter of staffing. It is a matter of just helping people before they get to that point of needing somebody to be intervening on the railway. And I would just add to Jake's point about asking if someone's OK. I'll go one further and I'll say ask twice. And asking twice is really powerful because how many of us would say, no, I'm OK, in the first answer? And when really there is something that just talking can help, just finding those services that are available through hubofhope.co.uk can be the place that you get help before you get to the crisis.
It's a dreadful situation, isn't it? And of course, it doesn't just affect those immediately involved. I mean, train drivers and other staff and the passengers on the train. Do you have procedures in place to help them if they've witness something?
This is a very distressing circumstance. And if somebody comes to the railway in serious crisis, then the ripples of that can affect many, many people, way beyond those that you might instantly think about. First of all, there's the train driver. There's other staff who might see bad things happen. There's those first responders who have to turn out after there's been a report of a problem. And of course, passengers. So this is a big ripple effect. We absolutely have very established systems for supporting people who work in the railway who come across traumatic circumstances. But that's too late because that's after the event. The most important thing is that we work on prevention. We work on getting people help before they reach that point of crisis.
Can you repeat the contact information?
Certainly. So hubofhope.co.uk or Chasing the Stigma. Those are the two things to put into your search engine. They're the things that will find you either the Chasing the Stigma charity or the places where you can just add in your postcode and find the local support services near to you.
Finally, have you got a simple message to our listeners?
My simple message would be there's always hope. Things are not beyond help. And by pointing people to the sorts of services that hubofhope.co.uk contains, then we remember that there's a brighter future tomorrow.
We were hearing from Alan Spence from Network Rail and Jake Mills from Chasing the Stigma. And if you or someone you know have been affected by any form of mental illness, please take a look at the Hub of Hope website, which you can find by just putting Hub of Hope or Chasing the Stigma into your search engine. But whatever you do, please don't just sit back and think that no one cares, because help truly is out there for you. And that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning, which is our magazine programme that's brought to you by Brighton's local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital radio with DAB+, and online at radioreverb.com. And so, until next time, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that my co-presenter, Richard Davis, will be here with his next edition in a couple of weeks. And of course, to remind you that for the last hour, you've been listening to At Home This Morning, which is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb. Finally, let me remind you that you can listen again to a selection of some of the most recent shows by entering either Radio Reverb or Grey Matters Productions CIC into your internet browser, then selecting the Listen Again tab and just selecting the show you would like to hear again. And so until we next meet again over the airwaves or however you listen, this is Chris English signing off as usual with please keep safe and warm and remember, stay home, save lives and protect the NHS. Bye for now.